Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Bass University TV. I am here with Pat Renwick and a friend of the show. He's been with us on Ike Live. He's been with us on Bass UTV, and it's great to have you back, Hunter Freeman.
Hunter Freeman.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having us.
Teen Wolf.
At a word.
Love you, Teen Wolf.
I just left the set, and I came here.
we just came off a big finish over on the FLW Tour. We've been watching. I love watching all the live stuff. I'm such a bass nerd. I got to watch every single second of it.
Right.
And
I thought
you were going to win that tournament. And
we were going to
talk about that tournament.
Right.
But Pat, what's the name of this show?
This is called Hunter Freeman Into the Abyss, Segment 1, Bass University 2020 Bassmaster Classic 50th Anniversary
That's
Edition.
Right.
Say that two times fast.
We are going deep into the abyss. And I know a lot of you guys watching can be intimidated by fishing deep water, by getting out there, fishing off of your sonar. I know it intimidated me when I first started fishing. I was a bank burner, just like everybody gets started.
Right.
But going off to deep water fishing, I mean, it can win tournaments. You can a lot of times fish for fish that nobody else is attacking.
You can lose, too. You can get beat doing it, too.
And they cannot show up for you.
That's true.
But they can
that's
do that true. On the it, bank,
yeah,
too.
It's a offshore fishing, it's a very big hero or zero. I mean, you can dominate out there, and you can – the only bad thing about it is they have a lot more places to go. You know, they can fish move
that's
around.
Right.
They're relating to bait, but we'll get into all of it.
Yeah, that is a big deal. They can certainly move, and they're a lot harder to find.
Absolutely.
It takes a lot more time to fish deep than it does shallow.
It's a whole lot more prep work goes into offshore fishing than I think people think.
Really?
You know, to find those places, a lot of times those places are so small inside of it. I mean, some of the best places I've ever found are the size of this boat. And I mean, where the fish actually get. I mean, they'll be on something, but they'll sit on one particular spot. But you spend so many hours finding that a lot of people, you know, I think that we're talking about deep water fishing, people getting intimidated by it. The biggest deal is, you know, people get out there and they'll look for 30 minutes, 45 minutes, and they're like, and they run it back to the bank.
Guilty.
And, you know, go catch a couple fish. I was guilty of it,
guilty.
Too.
Guilty. Throw it a dock.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, I mean, people just say, I just want to catch some fish.
I'm
going to
go flip.
Time. Yeah. And, it's a lot of work goes into it, you know, looking. And, I mean, it's just hours and hours of graphing, and I mean, it doesn't always take hours. You can get lucky and find the best hole in the lake in the first 30 minutes, but it's a lot of, you know, it's just scanning. I mean, that's how you find it. But
well, it would make it easier if the spots that are the size of this boat that you're looking for actually had the TH Marine LED lighting.
Yeah, I mean, both of them, they pop
I'm
right
out.
You can find them from the surface.
I'm telling you, this sucker pops. Yeah,
you could sight fish them.
Looking good.
Yeah.
Find them right from the dang surface.
Oh, yeah.
we're going to talk about two different places because you just had a wonderful finish, and it was so fun to watch, and we were all cheering for you. And it was down on the Harris Chain of Lakes. It was FLW tournament, and you were fishing deep. And I, this is what I saw. Now you're gonna have to correct me if I'm wrong, because I want to know. But man, it looked like you were throwing the ball and chain. It looked like you were Carolina rigging, catching them giant bass.
I was majority.
Pete,
of
you
my,
love that.
I love that.
Majority of all my damage did come on the Carolina rig. Mm-hmm. I caught a couple the second day on a trap. The wind blew really hard the second day. I ended up weighing 2 in on a trap, and I lost a fish that would have gave me 30 plus the second day. I weighed in 2 2-pounders the second day.
Gosh.
A lot of people didn't know that. I had 3 giants and a 210 and a 208, and I dumped another one at the boat that was pushing 7. So it was just one of those deals. But majority of my damage did come on a Carolina rig, and that was the deal about Florida. I was fishing offshore, but it was only 5 foot.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
It was just a contour.
It's still off. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, a lot of people, it looked like I was fishing deep, but it's a, you know.
Deep's
just
a relative term
to
your body
of
water.
Right.
And, you know, really what we're talking about is offshore fishing.
Right.
You know, away from the bank, away from the visible targets.
Right.
I just one thing. I want to make a note about this deep off, or not necessarily deep, but 5 foot, anywhere offshore. And it's similar to a game. And, Pete, you and Hunter might play this game as well. But when I'm driving, you know, I always got fishing on the brain, just like you guys doing.
Yeah.
Sometime I'll be by, you know, running through down the highway, and I'll see this field over there. And I'll be like, oh, yeah. You see that big rock pile in the middle of that field over there?
Absolutely.
That's where they live.
Absolutely.
That's kind of like finding deep water fish.
I was I was on a duck hunting trip last year, and we were up in North Dakota. It's cold. It's freezing. I mean, it's miserable. And we stopped to get gas, and I'm just staring out across this field. And finally, a guy went, "What are you looking at?" I said, you see that right vein coming out across that field? I said, if you found that on a smallmouth place, it would have happened. He's like,
that's it.
Yeah.
The game happens every time.
Absolutely. I even do it, you know, my girlfriend all the time. We'll be on the interstate or something driving, and we'll see how, like, kind of something makes a swing or something. And I'm like, whew, that's pretty. But, you know, it's.
We got it bad.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to make the analogy of that's how similar things are.
It is.
And then, you know, honestly, you got to look at what's on the bank a lot of times, and that's going to show you what's going on. And we've got the great John Johnson getting into our shot over here from Bass Fan. as we're talking live, good to see you, John. You're on next.
It's the magic of the Bassmaster Classic, John.
But what you were a lot of times what you see on the bank, it gets down into the water, and you can it lets you know what's down there. You can see those rock veins on the bank.
Absolutely.
Man, that can go to 30, 40 feet deep.
Absolutely.
Same thing.
Yeah, I mean, especially talking about that, you know, the technology of the units now is incredible. I mean, you see something like that, you know, like a rock vein or something, versus before, you know, back in, I didn't fish back then, but in the 70s and 80s, those guys would probably have come up and they'd throw out and they would have to feel all the way down.
Now Bernie Schultz was just talking about it.
Yep. I can shut my boat down, never, you know, still have my radio bumping, never even think about picking up a rod, turn around, scan by it, see exactly how far they come out, drop a waypoint, and if I want to make cast, I can. But I eliminated that 30 minutes of work that would have happened.
Right.
The technology is amazing.
Crazy.
I mean, it blows my mind. You know, the stuff that was out when I first got into, you know, first started getting comfortable with my electronics and stuff, to what's out now is just incredible. And I tell people that, you know, I said in 20 years, I said they're going to have it to where you drop the camera down and there's the fish. I mean, you can tell exactly. How big is the diet. I mean, it's exactly what is it, you know. So
you can even look in their belly and see what they're eating.
Probably. I mean, it's coming. Yeah. You don't have a live ultrasound under the water.
That's next.
Pro crawdad.
I remember going to lakes, and I would budget 2 to 3 days to run grid patterns with 2D sonar.
Isn't that something?
You know, and you just – because it would take so long to find the little rocks, the little outcroppings, but – yeah, the technology has advanced so much.
It's incredible.
You know, Hummingbird 360 is an amazing tool.
It's incredible.
That allows you to see that stuff while you're fishing. You know, you've got a rock pile over there, you got a log over there, and you got a weed edge over there, and you can hit them all, you know, while you're on spot lock.
Yeah, I mean, the spot lock is also amazing technology. I'll run one. It's not a sponsor of mine. I think it's the best life-changing thing that's ever been around. I don't know how I fish without it, but yeah, I mean, it's incredible. You know, all the electronics, they've gotten so advanced, and the images are so clear. They're, you know, it's all a contest on each other. They, you know, one gets ahead, they catch back up.
Sure.
It's kind of, it's just
constant
a domino
battle,
effect.
Yeah.
It is, you know, and I mean, but they're all, everybody makes good units that's out now in the stores, and I mean, I'm excited to see where it goes. They need to kind of slow down, though. I mean, it's going to be within 5 years.
It's a little hard on the pocketbook.
I'm telling you.
You know, it's funny. When they came out with the flasher, that's what they said the same thing. They're like, oh, it's unfair to the fish.
Right.
You know, there shouldn't be allowed to use flashes in tournaments. And then, you know, they advanced to the LCD technology, and they were like, oh, that's unfair. Now we've got live scope. You know, next thing, I don't know what they're going to have next, but we're going to find a way to catch fish better. And I think it's a wonderful thing. You know, I love to see how the younger guys like yourself are using this technology.
Right.
We just saw Huff use it at over at Rayburn, right?
Toledo. What Cody Huff did at Toledo was incredible. When you go back and watch this, my hat is off to you. That was insane. Nobody's ever done that there, and it is just
chasing fish with his sonar.
He did not have a spot. That's what was amazing about everybody. Yeah. Said, I don't know where he's catching his fish. I said he did not have a spot. He was dropping his trolling motor and finding them. I mean, it was
that's crazy.
It is insane. It was. I mean, what he did was incredible.
Yep.
Well,
what you're doing is incredible, too. And I see your tools to fish deep water. And tell me about these. I see four amazing deep water sets here. And tell me about them and how you apply them. Like when you're fishing Toledo or Rayburn or when you're fishing offshore.
You know, pretty much whenever I look for deep fish, especially at Rayburn and Toledo, you know, you'll have – it seems to be – you know, in my years of offshore fishing and playing with it over and over, the more places I go, the bigger the school, the smaller the fish.
Okay.
It seems to be that way. I was actually just telling a guy last night, I've never found a magnum school. I've found big schools that have decent fish, but those giant fish, those 7-plus-pound fish, I've never found a giant school. I mean, I have on places like Lake Fort, but not everywhere is like Lake Fort, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So it just seems on average, but those smaller fish, when you go to break them down, this is just the four setups that, you know, these four setups will apply anywhere in the country, whether you're around grass, stump, structure, brush piles, river channels, current places, with or without current. This will get you by anywhere. And then, obviously, there's more you can add to it. But,
right. You
know, I'm doing offshore fishing, especially in the south, the southern impoundment. These four baits will always be tied on my back deck.
Let's start. Let's start here. Or what are you starting with? You pull up on a ledge. You think there's fish there, sea bait, habitat. What's your first
pretty much pull? When I pull up, if I see fish sitting there, especially, you know, let's say I ride over it and I see five good fish and they're sitting there. I love to crank. I love it more
no
than anything.
Secret there.
You know, I love to crank. But I've developed a theory, and this is just a theory. It's not proven or nothing, but it seems to be if I pull up and I crank those fish first, and then I can't get them to bite, I think I ran them off with the crankbait.
Is that right?
In my head, I feel that way.
Okay,
so
okay.
Usually, if I pull up and see fish, I will go with the most subtle bait possible, which is usually just Carolina rig. This is actually the same one I was throwing in Florida on the shell bit. I caught myself. You know, just going with a 2 or 3 foot leader. I just got a 3/4 swagger tungsten weight on it. It's the Vader series. One bead, just a plastic bead. A swivel, 17-pound main line going to 15-pound here. It's usually what I'll throw if it's real thick timber, like if you're on Toledo or Rayburn or something and you're in the stuff. Let's say you're out in the forest, I'll go 17 to 17.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes throw 20 if you're in the thick stuff, but, you know, just like I said, this is actually a longer leader. I had this one rigged up because I was throwing it more around grass, but this is just the Z-bait, the Riptail Worm. It's in June bug. This is what I was catching majority of the fish on in Florida.
Okay.
It floats, and that's the thing about it. It's
okay.
It doesn't.
Does it just the tail float the whole worm?
It does. It completely floats. You know,
okay.
This bait will, when it runs, that weight will actually lay down, and this whole bait will come up, and it will kind of glide. But it's very subtle. You know, it's not a very aggressive approach, but it will kind of just drift through. And those fish in Florida, you know, I couldn't catch them on a big profile bait. I tried. You know, I wanted to throw something with some flap, something mean. You know, get a bigger bite.
Absolutely.
They wasn't having it. I mean, just. You know, there's a bunch of times I want to catch fish on something, it just simply won't work. It goes like that all the time. But usually, you know, when I pull up the fish, like I said, and I see them sitting there, I'll, you know, go with something subtle like that just to pull it through, and I'll give it 3 or 4 casts, and then I'll work my way up. You know,
interesting. So you go basically finesse to power.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Wow. That's awesome. That's
now,
the opposites.
Yeah.
I love it.
Now, if it's a day, you know, if I've been on some fish, and this is going back to, because there's, you go out of town and you fish tournaments and you're not that familiar with the lake, that is 100% the approach I would go with first. If it's a place at home, I know I've been fishing for 10 years, that thing's probably getting picked up first, you know, especially if I'm, you know, or, you know, if I got a limit and I'm fishing for a head, that's probably going with that. But, you know, going straight from there, I'm big on throwing big baits. I don't feel like it. My whole childhood, I was taught big baits catch big fish. I don't believe it. I mean, I've caught.
Really?
You know, this is an X-Site Maximus. It's 10 and a half inches long. I've caught 8-inch fish on this.
I didn't see that thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's a dogger.
It comes out, you know, it's 10 and a half inches. This thing right here, you know, throwing it around brush, throwing it around stumps. But when I fish this thing, you know, I throw it on a Texas rig. It's just a 3/8 ounce weight. Once again, 3/8 swagger weight. I throw it on a 4-off hook. I don't really like throwing it on a 5, which a lot of people see this big profile worm, they call me crazy.
Yeah, exactly. People throw 6s on that.
People throw 7s. I do guides, and I mean, people are like, what size hook do you throw on there instead of 4? It takes the action away from the worm.
Interesting.
But, you
aren't
know,
you worried about the worm balling up and getting in the way?
Not at all. Pretty much whenever you get a bite on that worm, because a lot of times the worm is going to be, when you're working the worm, and I'll throw it almost like a tube, like I won't actually drag it. I'll let my line stay slack and let this worm do it. And what happens is that weight is steadily going down the line. This worm's just kind of drifting. When that fish goes to eat it, majority of the time, he's going to pick it up there. He's not actually going to pick it up by the tail. Depends on what mood they're in, but he's not just going to pick it up there. And I mean, it's great when they bite it by the hook, but in reality, you know, they're going to pick it up. And that's usually when you feel that first thump, and then when you feel it again is when they done actually got it in their mouth and it's going. But, you know, give them time and, like, reel down and get it. But it seems the hookup on the 4-off is incredible. I mean, it'll get back in their mouth. It's, I've never tried that. I mean, it just, I throw it on a four off, and it gives the bait more action.
And I see what you catch.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean, I've caught 8-inch fish on that, and I've caught several over 10 on it. So it's a.
That's really cool. I know certain situations I like smaller hooks on treble hooks.
Right.
It's interesting to see you use a smaller hook there. But what you said, which I think is worth noting, most people, my partner included, Ike and Ellie, if Nat lands on his line, he sets the hook.
Oh my God!
Right? It's like a trigger. He's got a hair trigger. It's like boom. Yeah. You know, I gotta get
it's
that.
It's like
hook
that old trick. You ever mess with your fishing partner? Yeah. Hit the rod.
Absolutely. Yeah, funny story. Talking about that. It was 3 or 4 years ago. It was me and my buddy fishing a tournament, and the night before, he was about to fall asleep. We were night fishing, and I kept taking my rod tip and I tap his line.
Yeah.
So, and he set the hook and freak out, and I'm just back there cracking up. I thought it was the funniest thing in the world. But so the next day we're fishing a tournament, and it was actually on a football jig. We'll get into that in a minute. And it was on Caney, the lake I live on. But I'm sitting there pulling it, and it was just felt like somebody karate chopped my line. I mean, I thought Mr. Miyagi done got in the boot. It was violent now. But you know, I'm sitting there and I'm reel down. I'm like, man, don't be messing with me like that. You know, we're in a tournament. Just don't be doing it. He said, what are you talking about? He's facing the other way. I said, you didn't hit my line. He goes, oh, I'm reeling down. I'm just, wham. I don't know what that fish was. I guess he had it just shaking his head up and down. But it was actually almost a 10-pound. Yeah, I swear. I tell everybody about that. I was like, man, don't be doing it. I thought he was trying to get me back the night before.
You got to set the hook when that happens.
Yeah. You know, pretty much with going back to the worm, I mean, I'll throw this mainly in brush piles, you know, brush piles, and I don't really throw it on contour. Like, you know, going back to talk about these two things we've done talked about, the Carolina rig, I will throw on contour, and I'll use it as a search bait.
Yeah.
But mainly, one of the times, you know, like, I've caught big fish on Carolina rig. I was catching big fish on it in Florida. To me, a Carolina rig is an igniter.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, get those fish. A lot of times with deep schools, if there's 10 or less, you get one of them to bite, you can catch them all. And I've got a firm belief, get one to bite, and it gets them going.
Wait a second. If there's 10 fish or
if
less?
If they're the right ones. If they're, big ones, and we'll get to that.
But if there's 10 fish or more?
A lot of times, if there's that many fish, you'll throw through them, and you can catch 20 of them, and they'll be that long. This is going back to southern impalements, but you'll catch 20 of them, and they're that long. And a lot of times what's happening with that, let's say you draft the school, and, like, they're on a ridge right here. You know, the ridge is falling. And the school of fish is sitting right here. Well, okay, so you're throwing up at them, you know, because the deep water motto is throw shallow, drag deep. You know, that's what everybody's taught when they're younger and everything else. But those fish are sitting here. So you throw a bait through them, and you keep catching them that long. What's happening is there's better fish in that school, I can promise you. The bait is never getting to them. It's coming down, and one of them's eating it when it gets
here.
Before
it gets to the good
ones. It's never getting to here, and that's when a lot of times this comes into play, and we'll get into that in a minute, too.
Those fish.
Got a lot.
But you are a proponent of hesitating. Do you count? Do you go one, two, three? What's your deal?
Yeah, I have done it.
Before you set the hook.
It depends on how they're eating it. Like in Florida, they were eating it so weird. Actually, on the final day, I actually had another one pick it up, and they dropped it. And it was like I would pull and I would never feel a bite. There was no grass, but I would be pulling in the shell and just kind of feel, you know, I would feel the shells bumping.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of just never really feel nothing else. Just all of a sudden the shells kind of tugging back. And it was kind of just a wait and set the hook. But I said, yeah, over there, all of them, man, crazy.
Let them in. We're live.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're crazy.
They're all over.
But, yeah, you know, that's usually what I'll do. And a lot of times if you can get those smaller fish to go, if you've got the time and, you know, if you've got, you know, a lot of things, if you fish do school by size, but I'm a firm believer that fish do mix. I've been sitting there whacking 10 inches before and catch an 8-pounder out of the middle.
That's crazy.
All right. It happens all the time.
Wow.
But that is an igniter. You can get bit out of any school of fish on a Carolina rig.
It might just
differ what you have to have on it.
Yep.
But,
the great igniter.
All right, so we got the igniter. We got basically the heavy cover, the brush pile.
This is when I throw this, it's more of an isolation bait. If there's one stump, there's one brush pile, pretty much when I throw this worm, I'm not throwing it like out on a point or a ledge and covering water with it. It's, for example,
a target.
We'll use my reel seat right here is going to be a brush pile. I'm not throwing the worm over here and working it back all around it. I want that worm to sit. And just me sit there and soak it. And I'm really just trying to make one mad to eat it. And it's such a big profile and it's so gentle. It's not, this is a big worm, don't get me wrong, but it's not overly big. It's not 15 inches long. It's only 10 and a half inches long. But, you know, I'm going to sit there.
Only 10 and a half
inches. I'm going to sit there and just bounce my line. And all that's going to sit there and do, when I finally get that bait in the cover, whether it's a stump, a brush pile, whatever, and I'm talking about, I will literally sit there and count the branches. And I got on a deal this summer with it, this past year, where we literally were. We were just throwing it. Oh, my goodness. We were just throwing it in brush piles. And before, you know, we would work it, but we would just hit a branch and stop. And I'm talking about just sit there and just make that worm shake on that branch. And we were catching them. I'm talking about some big ones, too.
Wow.
But,
all right, so take us, because I see my producer over there flashing fingers at me. And we're going to go long on this one, because this is really, really good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Transition us from there into when we're throwing the football jig.
The football jig is, you can throw it on any of the things we talked about so far. It's a big fish bait. Mm-hmm. It's a big fish bait anywhere in the country. Smallmouth will eat it. Spotted bass will eat it. Largemouth will eat it. You know, just whatever. I tend to like throwing it more in pre-spawn than, you know, this is just a 3/4 ounce of peanut butter and jelly. It's a Bryant's Custom Jig. You know, just got a crawl trailer on the back. Got a little bit of chartreuse on it. It's got a weed guard. And, you know, usually with this thing, I will also, same thing as the Maximus, I'll throw it around the, you see that? I'll throw it around isolation, but with that bait, actually, we'll cover water with it. You know, I might make a cast, pull it back, and then, like, I'll use it. When I say cover water with it, I'll cover an area. Let's say I'm fishing a point. You know, like, if I mark the fish on the tip of the point, I probably won't throw this up and down the point to look, see if they move side to side. This I will.
Okay.
And then this is talking about, you know, don't get on the bite or something like that. Or they broke up, or you're catching small ones and doing that. But, I mean, if it's a good day and they're biting, pick the jig up and start cracking.
Do you ever replace that with a swing head?
I'm not big on a swing head, to be honest with you. I've got, like, four of them in my boat, and three of them are rusted. So.
How about you, Pete? You ever mess around with that swing head?
Oh, yeah. I love it. I mean, I use a swing head in
See, we don't have many
situations.
Rocks down there. Yeah. And that's the thing. Yep. Like, when I go to Table Rock, everybody's like, throw a swing head to Menace, and I'm like, I don't really know how to fish one. So
it's a nice little smallmouth trick, too.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
But, all right, so let's jump into your love, your crankbait.
The cranking, no doubt about it. This is a big, oversized crankbait.
That is a huge crankbait.
It's a 25-foot diver. It's not a sponsor of mine. You know, if I'm cranking and it's 15-foot and less, I'm going to throw a Salmo Rattling Hornet 6.5. 100%, that bait does well. It's got a good wobble to it. This time of year, like, you know, we're still in a pre-spawn pattern. The fish I've been catching lately are deep. I mean, they're 25 foot. The thing about a crankbait, though, when I'm fishing offshore, I don't care if it's 10 feet, 12 feet, whatever. I want to always go bigger. If it's 12 foot, I'll throw a 20.
Mm-hmm.
If it's 19, I'll throw a 25. You know, I want that bait digging. I want it to hit everything possible I can possibly hit. And the 12-pounder video, I just dropped it on YouTube. It was on a big crankbait. It was from Sam Rayburn. But that same thing, you know, I want to throw this thing as far as I could possibly throw it, get it down there. And that fish came out of like 17 foot, and I caught the fish on a 10XD. But, I mean, I want it to dig. But when I pull up and graph those fish, getting back to it, you know, if I do graph them and I see bait, like, if they're centered around bait, I'll pick the crankbait up first. Yeah. I will skip all this, and I will get right back to the crankbait. When I go to these options, the more igniter and going back to the isolation stuff is when no bait's present. Yeah. And those fish get offshore because of bait. That's the one thing about it. They don't go out there just because it's cool. They're not hanging out. Like, it's not a pit stop. It's
vacation.
Not a pit stop. Yeah, I mean,
it's not security. It's not what a lot of people might think it is.
Exactly.
Water temperature, it's not. It's about food.
It's about food. If the food goes, they go. And that's the common deal. And that's, you'll hear guys at home, they'll hear me griping a lot, like, because it'll be May and they should be out there and they're not. And I'm just like, be glad when they get back out there, you know. But, I mean, sometimes they're just not out. Like, when they go to spawn, the bigger lakes you will have, you know, fish will always stay offshore. But, you know, like, especially when fish first pull out, you know, we're about to get here in, what month is it, March?
Yes, sir.
March. Okay, all right. So in about May, when they start coming back out, when those fish pull back out, they're wanting to feed. I mean, like, it's because the bait's first getting out, and they're going to eat anything they possibly see. That time of year, it is a cranking fiasco.
Yeah.
This will not play. Like, I mean, I'll still throw them, but I'm going to throw the biggest, noisiest, biggest bait I can possibly find. And then as we get on in the summer and it starts getting hot, it's 100 degrees, then you'll start having to go back to the old faithful. But these four setups and rigs will carry you offshore fishing I mean, throughout the year.
The essentials.
100%. It's the staples. And I've got other stuff I'll throw, you know, big swim baits and scroungers and stuff. But it.
Hey, this is a great fundamentals of offshore fishing. I mean, these are really four amazing tools that a guy that's not confident wants to try this out.
Absolutely.
Great stuff.
Absolutely.
I know the Carolina rig, I got to say, people hate on the Carolina rig.
Keep hating
on it.
It's the fish catching.
Show them your Carolina rig tattoo. Show them the tattoo.
Yeah, that's it. The thing about a Carolina rig.
Love that thing.
The thing about a Carolina rig, it takes no skill, and there is no technique to fish.
That's
it.
Why I'm good at it.
There is no technique. You can get in the boat. There is no right or wrong when you fish it. Like, I mean, you can throw it out, and I've been in the boat with people that throw it out, and they just slowly reel it back, and they catch them. I've been with guys that. Barely pull it and catch them. I've been with guys that just let the boat drift with it, and they catch them. Like, there is no wrong way.
Right.
And it catches giants. It will catch fish, and it will catch giants. You got a kid, you know, you're taking your son, your daughter out, taking your wife fishing. Give her a Carolina rig, or give them a Carolina rig. They'll catch some fish, I promise you.
Yeah.
And you can put anything on the back of it, you know what I mean? That's what I like to throw. That's what I've been using lately. It's what I was catching the big ones on in Florida. But, you know, anything small – anything small profile, you can throw it. I mean, I've caught them with a Maximus on the back
Absolutely.
Of it, but it just, you know, anything like that, it'll get bit.
Well, you've just heard Hunter Freeman's fundamentals of deep water fishing, offshore fishing. Amazing, amazing little seminar. Appreciate you sharing
no
it
problem.
With us.
Thank you, man.
Wish you best
it.
Of luck out on tour.
Yeah. Hunter Freeman.
That's Hunter Freeman. That's Pat Renwick.
I want to say something real quick before we go. We got to do more because. There's more learning from him. There's more from this brain.
Yep.
Bass University students, that Hunter only gave us un poquito, they might say in Louisiana.
We need to do one on some grass.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Hunter Freeman, deep water expert.
We'll maybe do that tomorrow.
Into the abyss.
Hey, guys, thanks for watching. I'm Pete Kluzek for Bass U TV.